sitting in for Mark Steiner, and you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. In the second hour of today's show, we're discussing national news and politics and the 2016 presidential election. Republican former governor of Texas Rick Perry has announced that he's dropping out of the race for president, while Donald Trump and Dr. Ben Carson, I don't know if you've seen some of the poll results over the weekend, they are both surging and leaving the other many Republican candidates for president way back in the polls. There's also talk about the Iran deal that will have an impact on the race for president. Call in with your comments, 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, or send your emails to talk@steinershow.org. Joining me for this incredible, fun conversation, I hope, on the race for president in 2016, Nicolee Ambrose, National Committee Woman for the Maryland GOP, Chairman Emeritus of the Young Republican National Federation. Nicolee, welcome to the program.
Hello, hello. Good morning.
Always great to talk to you. In the studio with me, E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, journalist in residence, and associate professor of journalism right at Morgan State University. Professor Shipp, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
It's great to have you here. Amanda Marcotte is with us. She is a Brooklyn-based writer and XX contributor to Slate. She also writes regularly for The Daily Beast, Alternate, and USA Today. Amanda, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Folks, we are very interested in what you think about the race for president of the United States. I'm not sure, but technically, Nicolee, there are more than 150 people have filed to be a Republican candidate for president. A lot of people interested in running for president on your ticket, your party's ticket. But Rick Perry has said, I can't go any further. Were you surprised that he didn't wait at least for the second debate?
You know, that's a really good question. I guess I'm not surprised someone's dropped out.
Yeah.
I just appreciate the enthusiasm with all the people we have running.
That's right.
Great sign for us. One of the things I really liked and noted scene is if you look at, right, one of our first three battleground states, New Hampshire, more people are choosing and planning to vote the Republican ballot. Because, right, New Hampshire, you can just walk in and say what you're going to be that day. And I thought that was one of the best signs I've seen, in addition to all these candidates, that we have more people in a swing state like New Hampshire choosing to affiliate and vote with the Republican side. So I'm not surprised by it, because I'm really fatigued right now as an America, really wanting a new direction myself. Can't say I'm surprised, but we love these debates, though, too. So very excited to see what happens in this next debate.
We're going to get into a conversation about your front runners in just a minute. But let me ask Professor Shipp, give me your thoughts. Now, Rick Perry dropped out. There's still, as we know, many candidates in the race. And I think what Nicolee just shared with us about the enthusiasm in a swing state like New Hampshire, I mean, they have a Democratic senator, but they've had recently Republicans have been really on the uptick in New Hampshire. Give me your thoughts on what's happening with this primary.
Well, it's not surprising that Perry dropped out. He hasn't really caught on with too many people in his party or anywhere else. So it's good for him to go back home to Texas. As for whether the enthusiasm we're seeing in New Hampshire and elsewhere in the country is really excitement for the Republican Party per se, or it's part of the circus that we're seeing surrounding the candidacy of Donald Trump. I think a lot of people are kind of following him as a celebrity. I'm not sure they're focusing on what he stands for or whether what he stands for fits the Republican agenda.
Now, I want to ask you, Amanda, there has been cycles where we elect a Democratic president, then we elect a Republican president, then we elect a Democratic president. It seems like the country does this pendulum swing, but there is a great deal of interest in this field. I don't want to say more interest than Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, but there is a great deal of interest in this Republican primary. Will we see that continue? Will it become heightened as time goes on?
You know, I think it really depends on how many of the candidates drop out between now and when it really starts to heat up in the, you know, post-Iowa, post-New Hampshire primary season. I think, you know, obviously more than actual interest in the Republican Party, I think what we're seeing is that a highly contested, dramatic primary draws attention, and that's just the fact. I mean, in 2008, even though there were only two real candidates, the Democratic Party drew a lot of voters, a lot of attention, and it wasn't because there were necessarily more people interested in the Democratic Party than ever before, though I suppose Obama's win suggests that was part of it. But it was more that, you know, this was a real contest, and people felt like by showing up to the primary, their vote actually mattered.
Mm. Now, Nicolay, I want to ask you about that last point that Amanda made. Do you believe that that kind of enthusiasm, and I agree with you, we see it, does it really come down to, and I don't mean to belittle or, you know, disparage any of the other candidates, but is Donald Trump generating that kind of attention, which really would kind of diminish the interest people have in the other candidates?
I think this is an incredibly unique and fantastic phenomenon going on right now, but I do think it's primarily a twofold reason. One is just we've had a very radical left president, and I think there is a tremendous desire to move that pendulum. So I think that's one, and I think that would be happening naturally because of the current president, and really almost no matter what. But add to that the Donald factor, that he is a beast on Twitter. He is a beast on social media, and he has this just tremendous media and populist following. He's a popular guy. And whether you like him or not, he says something, and it reverberates across the country and beyond. So, you know, I think each factor is amplifying the other.
Mm. Let me ask you again real quick before I move to the other guests. Do you think that why do you think he is actually surging in every poll? He's the front runner, obviously and clearly, but he doesn't give anything specific. I mean, he'll talk about some themes. He'll mention some issues. But we still, for the most part, don't know what he would do other than being a great president, the best president we've ever had.
And king of superlatives. King of,
are you frustrated that we don't know more about how he would actually handle being president?
Well, obviously, I think these sound bites thus far have done well for him. With
good point.
The flip side of that is as you get closer, the specific answers are going to matter a lot. Mm-hmm. To a whole lot of people. So it's right for this moment in time for him. Obviously, he's found a way to make it work. But, you know, when you get into folks, probably like most of us you're talking on the show, we want specifics, right? Right.
410-319-8888 is the number. We want you to join our conversation. Are you a Donald Trump supporter? Are you looking forward to him carrying the Republican banner when it comes to the 2016 presidential election? 410-319-8888. Or maybe you have some interest in Maryland's own Dr. Ben Carson. Or another candidate is of interest to you. We're going to get into a conversation about Hillary Clinton and others in just a moment. Let me ask you, before we go to the phones, Professor Shipp, Donald Trump is on, well, he may not have to be on these shows, but he is the topic of every show when they're talking about politics. The other candidates aren't even mentioned other than Dr. Ben Carson. Donald Trump is doing something right.
He's having fun.
Ooh.
And the public, I guess, needs a little bit of fun every now and then. I really don't think the press is so out of touch and professional political commentators are so out of touch that we are reading the signals wrong. I just think this is a moment where he's having fun. Somehow it's going to increase his bank account, I'm sure. We haven't figured that out yet. But I don't see him really lasting to the end in this race. There's no reason for him to do that. The more we get to the point where you're going to ask him tough questions about his own financial accounts and his beliefs, I think he's going to find it's not so good for the bank account.
Amanda, Donald Trump is leading in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. He had a huge, I think it was 20,000 folks show up at a rally in South Carolina. Is it really more than just his personality? Is it more that he's so media savvy? Maybe people really do want a change from President Barack Obama.
You know, I really don't think so. I mean, obviously Trump supporters are never going to vote for Obama because they're already conservative. He's not really drawing, you know, the people. He's drawing a subset of Republican voters. And, I think that it's important, as much fun, I suppose, as everyone's having with Donald Trump's overblown personality, it's important to remember that the Republicans have done this in every election cycle, you know, at least for a little while. I mean, in 2012, we also saw a bunch of vanity candidates who rose to the top of the polls being, you know, demagogues and really getting a lot of attention because they were saying outrageous things, but they all burned out. And then, you know, Mitt Romney got the nomination. And I think that this is what conservatives do. I mean, we're talking about the Republican base is a base of voters that has been fed Fox News and talk radio, and they like big talk, and they like, you know, this kind of anti-PC, racist and sexist pandering. But they also are not stupid, and they know that when push comes to shove, they really should put somebody up who can get a few swing voters as well.
I am going to go to the phones, but I'm very curious. I remember before the Republican primary really started shaping up, the name Jeb Bush was mentioned constantly. Where is Jeb Bush now? Where is Governor Kasich? Where are these well-known political quantities, or I forget the word I'm trying to use.
They're on nighttime television shows.
That's right. Let's go to the phones. Marie's on the line. Marie, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Welcome. Catalina isn't on your program.
She was on in the first segment.
Oh, first hour. Well, I was going to congratulate her for commenting on Ben Carson, I think last week. Maybe it was Friday or something. I don't know.
Okay.
And I was going to add to that, back in August, Fox 5 had the Republican candidates to come on a stage or something, and I listened closely to Ben Carson's comment because they all had to say something quickly over the microphone, and he said, no socialism. So that sort of didn't go too well with me, and as far as Donald Trump is concerned, dump the Trump. That's the way I feel about him. Dump him.
Marie, thank you for
thank
your
you,
comments.
Dear.
Appreciate you calling in. Amanda, I guess I'm the only person that is surprised that a candidate who speaks softly doesn't really shake up much, except early on he made some comments about homosexuals and some other immigrants and others.
And Obama.
But Dr. Ben Carson, for the most part, Amanda, has been really, I don't want to say under the radar, but he certainly doesn't seem to have the flash and charisma of a Donald Trump. But he is right next to, in a CBS poll that was released this weekend, 2 points behind Donald Trump in the early primaries. What is it about, in your estimation, Dr. Carson, that is resonating with voters? Or maybe because he doesn't have a political history. Give me your thoughts.
You know, I think it's partially because he doesn't have a political history, and I think, you know, Republican base voters are enjoying having a moment of congratulating themselves for being outsiders right now. Again, I feel Dr. Carson is they're having fun telling pollsters that they're going to vote for him. But when push comes to shove,
no way,
in the primaries, it's not going to happen. And, you know, I think his appeal is kind of an ugly one, honestly. I think that Dr. Carson goes on TV and tells people that he comforts white people about some of their racist guilt, right, and tells them that they don't have to feel guilty, that this Black Lives Matter movement isn't important, that these sorts of discussion, that they're not wrong to have somewhat unsavory and illiberal opinions on race, right? And I think, you know, a lot of people want to hear that right now, but I also don't think that they're going to end up voting for that. He's more of a pundit than he is a politician.
Wow. Professor Shipp, I understand you have some thoughts on Dr. Ben Carson. He really is doing, I think, better than anybody thought in those early days of the primary. He just didn't seem to register. But now he is, in most polls, second to Donald Trump.
I think we're on to something here, that he really does provide for whites a way to feel more comfortable about the views they've had, their suspicions about black people through the years. Dr. Carson tells them that black people need to get their own act together, that they need to focus on black-on-black crime, that Black Lives Matter is a bullying technique. So he makes them feel comfortable in saying those things. At the same time, he also is appealing to, seems to be anyway, some of the people who are choosing their candidates based on their religious beliefs. He's the one who's challenging Donald Trump on who has more faith than the other. So he is appealing there, but I don't see him going too much farther. What's interesting about Carson, too, is that the more he becomes the darling of conservative white voters, the more he absolutely is losing the respect he had earned among black people because of his achievements as a neurosurgeon. He is, in some ways, he's articulating some views that we last heard in the 1930s and 40s among conservative blacks who were suspicious of government expansion. But he hasn't really tapped into any current black prevailing political thought. Mm.
Nikki Lee Ambrose, I'm very interested in your take on our guest's thoughts on Dr. Ben Carson. And Dr. Ben Carson himself, he really has this very low-key persona. Donald Trump says, hey, he has no energy. He can't be president. what about your thoughts on this race appeasement, this white appeasement when it comes to race?
Well, I have to tell you, I couldn't disagree more with what everyone else has said about Dr. Carson. I think of him as so many things, all good. I think he has done amazing things. I personally know him. He was my son's neurosurgeon, unfortunately, because you don't want to have Dr. Carson as your child's neurosurgeon. But beyond that, I think of him as one of the greatest champions for life that we have seen in America. And I think he specifically eloquently speaks about saving black babies' lives, because more black babies are aborted in urban areas than any other people's children. I think it really disturbs me to hear people talk about him in the way that has just been discussed. He is a good man. He has conservative values. And I think by being conservative, that is what this country and urban areas most need for renewal, because government expansion and intervention has ruined millions of people's lives over decades by making people dependent on the government and taking away their own self-determination and ability to achieve their potential in life. So I think this country sure could use a good dose of Dr. Carson's prescriptions for how to improve and help people achieve their potential.
We only have a couple of minutes before we go to the break. I'm going to try to get a caller in, 410-319-8888. Clarence, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call again, Anthony. I'm listening to your guests, you know, and a lot of what they say doesn't mirror reality to me. If you take, we got 300 million people in this country. If you were to poll, let's say 200,000 of them, they would not know what their views are to classify it as conservative or what. You know, they just wouldn't know because it's so skewed. Now, you know, on both parties, you've got half of them who are seriously giving consideration to the office of the president and the person that needs to occupy it on certain issues. Then you've got the other half with this chimerical thing in there. It's almost chimerical because they're not paying attention to what it takes to occupy that seat in the White House. They're like, oh, Donald Trump, he's made it big in the media, and then they fall susceptible to his pandering to racism and the other things. Dr. Ben Carson, oh, he's a brain surgeon. Oh, great, that's what we need. That's chimerical. You've got one half of the Democrat, both parties, who are seriously horrified by this whole thing because you've got another half of them whose idea of a good time is throwing empty beer bottles at Gators and listening to Rush Limbaugh tape. Come on. It doesn't mirror reality. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Clarence. We've got to get ready for a break. When we come back, we're going to take some of your calls. A lot of people want to jump into this conversation, but we're also going to talk about Hillary Clinton. She said, I'm sorry. She said even she was being selfish by having one server for both her role as Secretary of State and herself as a private citizen. And what do you think about the other candidates running for the Democratic nomination? Bernie Sanders was counted out early. A lot of people said he can't be elected president. He is now ahead of Hillary Clinton by 10 points in the state of New Hampshire. We're going to have that conversation with our guests and you when the Mark Steiner Show continues. I'm Anthony McCarthy, sitting in for Mark Steiner, and you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Call in with your comments at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, comments on The Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, or send us an email at talk@steinershow.com. We're joined this hour by Nicolee Ambrose. She's calling us by phone. She's a national committee woman for the Maryland GOP. Professor E.R. Shipp is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist in residence, and associate professor of journalism at Morgan State University. Brooklyn-based writer and XX contributor to Slate, Amanda Marcotte is with us by telephone. She also writes regularly for The Daily Beast, which I see all the time. Love it. Mm-hmm. Alternet and USA Today. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
This is a very interesting thing. Before we move to a conversation about the Democrats, I want to talk a little bit about not Donald Trump, not Dr. Ben Carson. The producer just came in and gave me some staggering numbers. They are really dusting the other challengers. But I want to talk about Jeb Bush. He is a legacy candidate. A lot of people, I think, early on believed that he would be the nominee. Some people still believe, after all the hype and all the attention, he'll still be the nominee of the Republican Party. Nicolee, what happened? Why isn't the Jeb Bush campaign resonating with Republican voters?
Oh, what a good question. No, I have to say, in defense, here's the one thing I'll say about the Bushes. Uh-huh. I've never met a family of that so consistently raises such nice, wonderful, lovely, honest, decent people. I mean, they are just good, nice, true as the day is long. You know that's what you're going to get when you know, whether it was George W. or H.W. or Jeb, they're just lovely people. So I just have to put that out there first.
Mm-hmm.
I think many people have a problem in America. This is America. This is not the United Kingdom. We are not about, we are not supposed to be, at least, about family legacies and dynasties. And so when you take someone like with a Bush name like Jeb Bush, and then you, you know, for years people have thought and known that Obama and Hillary cut a deal, so Hillary was supposed to be the nominee in 2016, and you put these two names that have been in politics for 40-plus years, ew, you know, people just kind of say, no, I want to change. This is supposed to be about fresh blood and new blood and not about a dynasty. So I think that is Jeb's number one strike against him in that in this cycle and especially this year's particular environment. So I don't think he has much of a chance just because it's a very anti-incumbent feeling no matter what. And then you add our predisposition to not be so fond of dynasties here in America.
Amanda Marcotte, give me your thoughts. George Bush said that he was 100% behind his brother. He talked about how much smarter his brother Jeb was than he was, which I don't think is very hard for a lot of people to believe is true. But why is Jeb Bush, with that name, with his fundraising ability, why isn't he doing better?
I think it's two reasons. I think I don't know that we have an anti-incumbent. I mean, I think there is somewhat of an anti-incumbent feeling out there. But I think it's much more specifically Bush-oriented. And the reason is that I just don't know that he's ever going to get over the fact that his brother went out as one of the most infamous presidents in recent history, you know, starting an unnecessary war, tanking our economy. I don't know that people want George W. Bush Part 2. And as much as even his brother is trying to be like, no, he's different than me. He's not me. I think that a lot of voters are just going to see it as Part 2, and they don't want that. You know, and I also think it's him. I think he's just a bad candidate. I think, unfortunately, I wouldn't have guessed that, actually. You know, I hadn't all paid that much attention to his campaigning skills, and maybe they were better on a state level. But every time he gets out in the public eye, he looks like a deer caught in headlights, and I think that that's beginning to get to people. He just doesn't feel like he has the level of professionalism of even his brother, who at least always seem to be kind of happy to be in the spotlight. He always seems a little bit scared. So I think that's working against him.
Professor Shipp, there's this anti-incumbency feel that I think a lot of people are talking about. And they talk about Donald Trump is touching something. He's hitting on something that is real and alive in the country. And Ben Carson is really tapping into that anti-incumbency. But do you think that that overrides that name that and maybe Nicolie's right. Maybe people don't like dynasties. We don't have kings and queens in this country.
We do like certain dynasties.
That's
we
very
do.
True.
We do like
very
certain
true.
Dynasties. They give us a sense of, I don't know, the same feeling that the Brits have, I suppose, that they can point to in time that this family has been there with us through key moments in our history. But I think with Jeb Bush, who wants to be called Jeb with an exclamation point, he is a little bit more cerebral, it seems, I suppose, for this particular campaign. Donald Trump can say anything he wants to say. Bush wants to be a little bit more modulated in what he's saying. So he can't jump right into the fray and be wild and crazy as a Donald Trump can be. And he isn't the kind of oddball oddity presence that Ben Carson can be. He is kind of white bread, milquetoast, kind of low-key personality, and that isn't working in this cycle. He also doesn't appear to be conservative enough for the true conservative Republican base that all of them are trying, or most of them anyway, are trying to go for.
410-319-8888. We want to hear what you think about the Republican candidates for president and the Democratic candidates for president. Full disclosure, I was thinking about this as Nicolie was talking. When I was a junior in high school, was accepted into an intern program that was run by then Vice President George Bush. And I have to tell you, I found him absolutely the kindest most loving person. He would bring us into his office. He would talk to us. I did for a little while become a Republican, based on my relationship with the vice president at that time, after I left the internship.
That's often how people become politically affiliated, actually.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Personal connection with someone.
And he was a great guy. 410-319-8888. Beck is on the line. Welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. Hello, you're on the air. Beck, are you there? Okay, we'll just move on. 410-319-8888 is the number. If you have some comments, I want to start with Professor Shipp. Hillary Clinton said, "I'm sorry." She is, of course, still the front runner, I guess, even though she is really falling behind Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire. She said, "I'm sorry. It was selfish of me. I am going to be as transparent as I can be on this issue." She's going to testify before Congress. She's given one speech on what she did as Secretary of State using this server. But I think it goes deeper than that. I think it speaks to what has to be an ongoing problem. People don't trust the Clintons.
And they don't trust Hillary in particular.
Yeah.
That's been true for many, many years. And some of it has to do with a sexist reaction to her, but some of it has to do with her own strong personality, I suppose. And in this particular case, this whole server email business, most people don't even understand what the issue is. In fact, sometimes I can't figure out what they're talking about on any given day. Some of the so-called classified material was never classified as that secret. All of that gets confusing, but it still leaves Hillary Clinton out there as seeming a little aloof and arrogant, and I don't know what transparent now means. We've already had the release of many thousands of emails, most of which are terribly boring. So I don't know what more she can add. She said, "I'm sorry." Maybe she should have said that earlier. But I don't quite understand how she has gotten so far in her political life and not have realized that this would have been a problem. Just even having one server to handle both her private and her official email.
Nicoli Ambrose, she said, "I'm sorry." She said that also that her campaign really said, not Hillary Clinton, that they were going to be, that she was going to be more authentic and more transparent. They said they're going to reset. Are those the kind of words you need said about you if you are the front runner for the Democratic nomination?
Yeah, that's not a good sign, eh? So Hillary Clinton could not be authentic if her life depended on it. Her entire existence since she and Bill entered political life is about scheming and playing in people. But
they were being politicians like your Republican friends.
I don't know who you're talking about, but let me give you a really specific example of the State Department stuff. I actually have gone through State Department security briefings for someone who exists within the State Department world for a security clearance. You leave that briefing terrified that if you leave a piece of paper on your desk, you could be hauled off to prison with criminal charges and basically hardly ever able to get a job again, okay? So for Hillary to have gotten away with what she has gotten away with, she's about the only person on this planet who could have done what she's done and not already be in jail. It is absolutely remarkable. Anyone who has existed in that world knows how what she did wasn't a little over the line. It was off the charts. Totally illegal, not a question about it, and she is definitely receiving preferential treatment for breaking the law over and over and over again.
She says that other people have done the same thing.
Including Colin Powell for a period of time, Nicoli.
With State Department, sorry, go ahead to tell me, because they
I'm just saying
fail. I'm just saying, anyone who does this, according to the way the law is structured, if you have done this, Petraeus took a settlement on this. He got whacked for it. I mean, I have a huge problem when in America certain people receive preferential treatment. That is not supposed to be what it's about. If it's the law we're going to choose not to follow here and there, get rid of the law. And if we want our national security secrets held by the Chinese and the Russians, because guess what? We know they have more of these emails than we do. Great. That's a brilliant choice for us to make for our Secretary of State.
Amanda Marcotte, I do want to ask you, we've been talking about this anti-incumbency wave that's sweeping across the country. Do you think that that is part of the problem? Dynasty politics, Hillary Clinton being married to a former president, and then she went through the steps, of course, very high positions, Senate, Secretary of State. And people just maybe it's not what we're thinking. It's not about people not being able to trust her or not trusting the Clintons. Maybe they just don't want someone who's been involved in politics so deeply to be the next president of the United States.
I think that is and counts for 95% of the polling data that we've got right now, honestly. I mean, I think the notion that this quote-unquote scandal has anything to do with this, look, this is what Republicans have been doing to the Clintons for 20 years, 25 years now, creating these faux scandals, making a big deal, hoping to confuse people by making them so complex that people don't even pay attention to the details because they can't even make sense out of them. And just sort of hoping that they create a sense of where there's smoke, there's fire. But, you know, they did this with Whitewater, and they did it with Vince Foster, and they did it with, you know, the impeachment over the Monica Lewinsky thing. And it's just been over and over. I think most of the public just tunes that out now. We know what that is. That's the vast right-wing conspiracy, right? The fact of the matter is, I think right now the reason Clinton is slipping in the polls is, again, you're talking about Democratic primary voters. These are people, this country is becoming increasingly politically polarized. Democrats identify as liberals more and more all the time. And so right now, Sanders is getting a huge boost of support by people that like the idea that he's the most liberal person in the field, right? And, you know, whether or not that's actually going to matter when the primaries actually happen, that's a different story. Like, we are months away from the primary. This is a lot of voters kind of expressing their identity as opposed to thinking strategically. Mm-hmm. You know, when the primaries come around, I think we'll be seeing a very different result than the polling data suggests right now.
Let's go to the phones, 410-319-8888. If you want to join this conversation, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Mark. Mark, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Oh, yes, sir. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well.
First-time caller.
Wonderful.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make a comment on, I guess, one of the ladies, because I believe that Dr. Carson for the Republican Party, but I do believe that he would, because he's not really a politician or a career politician, per se, and I think that he could do a good job. I mean, I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican myself, and some of his literature I've already read his literature, and so I believe that he can win the Republican nominee. It's a long ways off yet, but I think that Dr. Carson would be a change. I know he's low key, like the young lady said earlier, and all. But me personally, I believe that he would be the best. Whether it's Democrat or Republican, I believe that he would be the best person.
Mark, let me ask you, what is a Frederick Douglass Republican?
Okay. Oh, good. I knew that was coming. A Frederick Douglass. Okay. Yes, sir. A Frederick Douglass Republican, in other words, I believe in the value of Frederick Douglass. You know, number one, respect for the Constitution. To respect for life. I believe in limited government and, you know, the belief in a personal responsibility that we should have,
okay.
You know, all of us. And it's basically, you know, what we may have heard for many years as what we would call classical Democrats. In other words, it would be more of a classical Democrat, a Frederick Douglass Republican.
Mark, thank you for that. Thanks for your call. Nicolette, let me ask you about Ben Carson, and this is very simple, but I think people keep talking about his personality, how amiable he is, and how pleasant he is. But Is he the kind of fighter that the Republicans are going to need to go against Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders?
Oh, well, I think he absolutely has a very measured temperament.
Yeah.
If you've heard,
that's a good way to describe it, actually.
If you've heard him give a speech, he'll talk about how he was not always that way. When he was young and growing up, I believe, right, in Michigan and Detroit, had a single mother who had many jobs. It was just Ben and his brother. And he had a very, very bleak life, and he was saved through reading. And kind of it opened his eyes to the world and that there's more out there and that it's America and you can reach for the stars. And it very much a story of self-determination and willpower. And so he talks about how when he was young, he was so angry and angry at everything and how he had a horrible attitude. So what you see is a man who's just finely tuned and honed himself. It was not how he came out of the womb. So he has worked to be this way through education and study and a strong faith.
Professor Shipp, before I go back to the phones, let me ask you and Amanda to talk to me about Bernie Sanders. Almost immediately when he announced that he was running for president, I think a lot of people liked him. A lot of liberals, it's interesting, a lot of people call Barack Obama this flaming liberal. People like Bernie Sanders and the left of the party don't see him as liberal at all. They call him something entirely different. Why is Bernie Sanders resonating so and powerfully resonating with Democratic primary voters? Is it because the primaries are kind of dominated by that liberal wing of the party? Professor Shipp?
It may be some of that, but I think, as someone said earlier, this is a period of time where people can express their identity, what they really feel passionately about in their politics. Bernie Sanders represents that for a number of people. Unfortunately, the press early on decided he had no chance and have been treating his campaign dismissively. So I think that says more about the press than it does about him or his candidacy. He has run up against difficulties with younger black activists because they see that he is taking for granted that because he knew and marched with Dr. King, then he's a good guy and he doesn't have to prove himself to a newer generation. So that's part of his problem right now, is not just coming from the fact that some people think he is too radical, but also that he has to prove his relevance to a younger generation.
Amanda, Hillary Clinton recently classified herself as a moderate. And I think she was making some distinctions between her and Bernie Sanders. But is that part of why she's having trouble, not Republican conspiracies only, but the Democrats aren't sure they want a moderate to be president? They got one now, actually. But give me your thoughts on that.
You know, I think it's almost kind of, it's telling of the media environment that Sanders is treated like he's some kind of radical.
Yeah.
And his, like, political opinions are actually very straightforward and mainstream when you actually look at polling data of Americans. You know, I think that Sanders is, I like Bernie Sanders. I think he's great. I think what he is he symbolizes for a lot of Democrats what they kind of want the Democratic Party to be. And in the same way that Obama did, which is they want it to be the party of the future, right? The 21st century, America becoming more urban, America becoming more cosmopolitan, America becoming more, you know, European in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, Clinton, you know, she's tapped into a lot of that, but I think she might still be hooked on what her husband was, which is this kind of hope that there's this big middle America out there that you can kind of get the votes for, you know, you can get some swing voters off of. I think that's increasingly less true in this country. I think that, you know, the rural middle America that we all imagine is kind of disappearing. People are moving back to the cities. People are becoming more like that. And I think that, you know, kind of supporting Sanders is a way for people to indicate to the party that this is what they want. They want more Obama. They want more Bernie Sanders. They want more of that kind of futuristic, forward-thinking Democratic Party as opposed to, you know, the old triangulation Clinton era.
And Hillary Clinton still is leading. I'm reading something here. She is leading in almost all of the demographics that make up the party. She's leading with African-Americans, Hispanic voters, obviously women voters. So she actually does have some very basic, strong support within the party. Bernie Sanders really going head-to-head and challenging that. Let's go to the phones, 410-319-8888. Michael's on the line. Michael, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Hey, Carthy, Mike, that equity matters. Now, you have had an entertaining show today.
Thank you.
It should be in the afternoon or the evening with a drink because it has been really fun.
I appreciate that.
I don't disagree with you. You got a Frederick Douglass, Rip Van Winkle, Republican, whatever that is. It made me think about, you know, the summer I spent for James Baker in the State Department being a Rockefeller, Colin Powell Republican, whatever that is. But this thing with you know, the Republican Party, and please take some pictures of your guests that have that beautiful, because they're going to be in a museum at one point. Like this old trope of personal responsibility without any systemic contextual analysis and pull yourself. It is almost laughable when you look at the Republican Party completely falling apart. I mean, you're talking about 43% of people in the Republican Party who would support a coup. Right, like the old coalition of the country club Republicans, the military Republicans, and then the sheep who vote against their interests, who've always all hated each other, is just straying with Trump's candidacy. And so to kind of go back to this old, you know, Lee Atwater trope of personal responsibility. I mean, I'm waiting for us next to bring out Willie Horton. I mean, you've got to have some ideas to govern in this country, and what you can't fight against is demographics. Demographics is destiny. And the Republicans have no answer. Hillary needs to stop reacting and being a fighter, because every time they throw up some smokescreen or some ridiculousness, as your other moderator pointed out, she shows her hand. She's not being strategic, because she's in such a fight mode ever since the Morton Downey days turned our politics into a slugfest. So that's her only problem. But I mean, the country is shifting, and neither party seems to really be in tune. And so I think your comment about kind of recalibrating and trying to figure out what the future is. But we're just stuck in these old tropes, and it's been really entertaining to listen to your show this morning.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you giving us a call and your perspective on these issues. We only have a couple of minutes left. Let me ask you, Nicolay, and my other guests to comment on, what do you believe the American people are looking for? You all have 19, candidates that people are more familiar with the 150 that have filed to be Republican candidates for president. What do you think the American people are looking for? Some of your candidates, Donald Trump, Dr. Carson, Carly Fiorina are really resonating with a lot of folks. They're getting big crowds. They're coming up on the polls. Carly will be in this discussion on Wednesday, this debate. What do you think the American people need to hear so that they will begin to make a decision to either switch to and support Republican candidates, or that the Republican Party will begin to galvanize around a particular candidate?
Well, I think the Republican Party in this cycle is attracting a lot of people who aren't Republicans. It helps, right, that you have so many candidates, and they each have people who they've been appealing to. But I want to talk for a second about why is it that there is this enthusiasm? And if you look at, right, we had 10 contenders on the primary in the main debate in the first debate. Right now we're going to have 11, and 3 of those 11 are outside candidates, right, have never held elective office before. So I think that's not just a Republican trend. That's an American trend in this day in 2015. And I think we have to ask why. And I think the reason you see such media gravitation and such, and I think the media in this case is actually following the people, which I'm glad to see it do because I don't always think that happens, is I think people are fascinated and are loving the concept of these are people who've been successful, who have achieved the American dream. And some of these people started with nothing. Carly started as a secretary in Washington, D.C. for her first job. Ben Carson was impoverished with a single mother in Detroit. Trump had a little bit of a leg up. He had something to start with. But
about $40 million.
These are people who have been successful and are unabashed about it, and they say, you know, guess what? Our American system, free markets, these things are great, and we want this country to be able to do
what
it did
for us.
And I think Americans are just dying to hear that after we've had a president that has been going around the world apologizing for this country and putting us in a horrific position as regards to national security.
I got to let these other guests make some closing comments. I have about a minute left. Nicolee Ambrose, appreciate you so much. Professorship, give me your thoughts. What do the American people really need to focus on?
Well, I think what they are focusing on is they want to be entertained. So they're being entertained as if this is a big reality show competition and somebody in the end is going to win. But I think also they like the idea of America winning, whatever that means, and we're getting some of that through Trump. But they also want to hear that they themselves are going to personally benefit somehow because people are feeling that they're struggling financially and otherwise.
Amanda Marcotte, give me your thoughts on what the American people are looking for over the next several months.
You know, I think it depends on what definition of American people.
Very
I
good
think,
point.
there's liberal and left-leaning Americans, I think, are looking for the future. I think that they realize America's changing, and they're on board with that. And they want candidates who also see the future the way they do, as a more tolerant and accepting and cosmopolitan place. I think that Republican voters right now feel the country slipping from between their fingers. They feel themselves slipping out of power. They wish that they could just force the world to be the way it used to be, you know, the Leave It to Beaver, white male-dominated world. And I think that right now they're against candidates they see as compromising. They don't like career politicians because they have to make deals with Democrats, and they just want to kind of stomp Democrats out of existence.
Amanda, I gotta go. It's time for us. Amanda Marcotte, thank you so much. Professor E.R. Shipp and Nicolee Ambrose, thank all three of you for this great conversation.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Monifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wall Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's show to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on steinershow.org or listen to us on your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Anthony McCarthy. Have a great day.